You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
This man reminds me of a time, Stugatz. I am scared of this man. He was a menace, so strong, so physically strong. Other people were scared of this man, so skilled as well.
Yep.
Larry Johnson with us, a rare smile from Larry. I don't remember a lot of those.
And he looks fantastic. Yes. He looks like he can get like 12 and 10 right now.
He could. Yes. Put it on the poll, Juju, please, at Levitard Show. He's shaking his head. In fact, I think you've underestimated him. Could Larry Johnson get you 15 and 12 right now if you put him in the league? But they've ruined basketball. It's no longer allowed to have someone like you in the middle of a great team. Thank you for being on with us. You're with us on behalf of DirecTV. Before we get started, what are you doing with them?
Well, you know, this is my best time of the year, March Madness. So I'm happy to be here back in Las Vegas, partnering up with DirecTV for Business, Big Chicken, as you see behind me, and the Shaquille O'Neal Foundation. So, you know, Shaq do a lot. He's a friend of mine. So we here. And at the end, we're also going to with DirecTV and Big Business Big Chicken, we're going to donate. To Shaquille Foundation, make sure little big brother's taking care of everybody. So it's just a great time for me to be here in Las Vegas.
That's very nice of you, but I want to talk to you about how much you still hate the Heat.
not as much anymore. Not as much now when we play. You know, it had a fierce rivalry going, so, you know, we enjoyed it. You don't have them too many rivalries like this anymore, right?
Time heals, Dan.
I don't like that it heals. I want you to be mad at the Miami Heat forever. Like, why would you not be? Why did it heal? Tell us, what do you remember as the greatest of those stories?
Well, for one, I remember I went 3-4 against those guys. So, you know, I think they beat me my first year in New York. But other than that, we won, I believe, 3 in a row and on their court. So I don't have too much to be mad at them about, you know what I mean? So, you know, it was a great rivalry. Went from Jeff Van Gundy to Pat Riley, having the same system. I remember at one point I was guarding Jamal Mashburn, and they called out a play. And I was running to Jamal's position before he got there because the plays was identical. Our fist up with their fist down. But, you know, we knew them in and out, and they knew us so well that, you know, it was just really man to man. It wasn't no trick plays, wasn't no getting no trick baskets. I just remember it being all guts and glory.
Larry, you guys always wanted to fight, and Jeff Van Gundy was holding on to Alonzo Mourning's calf in one of the games on the court. Like, yes. What are you talking about? Like, you're describing a different thing than what I saw. You people hated each other.
I am not. I'm describing the same thing you described. I'm just saucing it up a little better. You know what I mean?
No, you are.
I'm saucing it up.
What are you talking about? Like, what are you and Alonzo Mourning were going to kill each other.
At the time when we was 30 something years young, we had that taste of blood. Now, you know, we got children going to school. Like, how you doing, Zoe? Everything good now? We good now.
Oh, man.
That's so disappointing.
You've ruined it.
It really is disappointing.
So disappointing. Come on, fellas.
No. Because you and Alonzo Mourning, I remember, I don't know what triggered it, right? Maybe it was just competitive fire. But I remember that there was nothing that felt like it in sports. The fight that you guys had, your coach was hanging from Mourning's ankle on the court. It was, yes. And that was started because you and Alonzo hated each other.
Alonzo and I did not hate each other. We hated playing against each other because he was going to throw elbows and I was going to throw elbows. You know, people, when we go back to that, people try to say, and I went through this about 2 days ago, I was explaining this. People were trying to say Lonzo and I had a problem at Charlotte. At Charlotte, playing together, Lonzo and I never had a problem. And I, you know, you talk to Lonzo, he'll tell you this. We never had a problem playing against when we was on the same team. I don't know why Charlotte decided to go different way and traded both of us. But Lonzo and I, we got along well. We played together well. I think we both had that competitive spirit that we didn't want to lose and we was going to do anything to win. You know, like you said, back in the 90s and 80s, back then, it was a little different game. So it was some elbows being thrown and he got heated and we just got into it. You know, luckily no punches landed. So nobody got really, you know, if he'd have hit me, I'd be pissed now to this day. So, you know, that's why, you know, it's probably easier to let the fight go.
Dan, I appreciate the effort. You can ask it again a different way if you want to, but he's let it go. The only person who hasn't let it go is you. I mean, we need to move on. That's you fair. And I, and I'm with you, like, you but he's what? Let it go.
You're yeah. right. Fair yeah. enough.
Yeah. But how much did you hate the Heat?
Do you have anything? Does Larry have anywhere in his house anything from the Grandmama commercials? Is there a wig in one of the drawers?
Never. Come on now. Stop it. Look, they wouldn't have let me have anything. They kept everything, so... Nah, other than some posters, that's about it.
But that made you a lot of fame and money, did it not? I mean, people still talk to you about that ad campaign, correct?
Correct. At the time, you know, I was a little hesitant to do it. You know, coming out of college, I wanted to be Larry Johnson. But the marketing guys at Converse, and that's who came up with it. They was just, we was in it together, meaning they was just as young as I was. I was 21, and they just hired like three new marketing guys at Converse. They were 22, 21. And, you know, they had these ideas of doing something different than guy playing basketball, running and dunking. And I'm like, no, man, that's what we do. But luckily it worked out. I still get the praises from the Grandmama commercials to this day. Only time I've had a commercial on Super Bowl Sunday, you know, commercials on Super Bowl is real big. So Grandmama was there one time and she did well. So I have no beef with that with my Grandmama day.
Larry, you had a great NBA career, but I am wondering, is UNLV, the years you spent there with that team, that legendary team with Jerry Tarkanian, is that the best time of your life?
Absolutely. Like I say, I'm back here now, and you know, I get these questions a lot, and I tell people the only championship I've ever won, I appreciate the compliments on my career, but I won one championship my whole life. I mean, and two, if you want to count eighth grade, I won a championship in eighth grade in Dallas, Texas.
No one counts that one, Larry.
I mean, but he dominated eighth grade.
No one cares about that one, okay?
He does.
I know. We was a beast in eighth grade. What are you talking about?
Can you imagine Larry Johnson in eighth grade?
Larry, nobody, oh my God.
Boy, 45 a game, man. Yeah,
Larry, yes. I know what I looked like in eighth grade when I was that age, and of course you scored 45 because you were
45 a game. I gave it to you.
All right. Fine, Larry. Fine. Yes, you would have given it to me in eighth grade, Larry. Fine. Yeah. Fine, yes, Larry.
No holes barred.
I give it to you good.
Other than that championship, the only championship I ever won in my career was at UNLV. So it was definitely the best time of my life as far as basketball career.
Larry, thank you for being on with us. We appreciate it. It was good catching up with you, sir.
Hey, I appreciate you guys, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
He got me to thinking about something because when he started naming former Charlotte Hornets or Bobcats, I got to thinking of Michael Jordan's career because he's now selling to someone named Gabe Plotkin and the precipitous name fall from You're Owned by Michael Jordan. To You're Owned by Gabe Plotkin.
Might be an upgrade, though, in owners.
But it made me think about what a spectacular failure he was, that the only thing I associate with that franchise while he runs it is him. And it was just brand him, and he's going to get $1 billion, and he's going to win the game. But he was terrible.
Well, he wins every game.
Yeah, but he's terrible as an owner, like awful. Truly terrible. And it made me think, the best player in the history of that franchise is blank.
Kemba Walker.
Woof.
right? It's Zoe, right?
It's Zoe, but he wasn't. He's associated with the Heat, right? So it's Jamal Mashburn.
Muggsy Bogues.
It's a long time ago, is my point. Nothing came through there in the entire time. Like, Jordan was the sucker at the table, but made all the money. Cashes out. And we'll make all the money. We'll win that game. But good God, did that league run laps around him as an owner? Just terrible.
Yeah. It was as bad of an ownership tenure as you will have. And just from a results standpoint, I guess, like, the Donald Sterlings, Robert Sarvers of the world will, like, be beneath him. But
at least we weren't toxic is what is the banner they can hang.
But, I mean, that Charlotte is a growing city that should not be an anonymous franchise. And yet... You, like word association, you say name a bad team that's coming to your city on a Tuesday night. The Charlotte Hornets top that list. Oh, Charlotte's in town. Their word association bad, and it is the genius of ownership in sports, particularly American sports, that you can do that bad of a job and increase the value of your franchise by 2x and cash out, make a huge amount of money and go and do your next thing. But Michael Jordan was really bad at this. And it's kind of remarkable considering, like, you know, the MJ versus LeBron, the constant analysis of Michael Jordan, that it never gets discussed that Michael Jordan is this bad.
Look, man, there are so many unbelievable things on his resume. Defying gravity is not at the top of it. Making bald cool is not at the top of it. Him being an unbelievably shitty owner and nobody caring. That's a magic trick.
Mecca Okafor is one of his best players.
Top 10.
Do you think that Robert Sarver got out and Michael Jordan looked around at all the owners and go, oh God, I'm the worst of them. I need to get out now. Like did Robert Sarver selling the team precipitate Michael Jordan selling his team?
But if the game and
it's just James Dolan.
This is the thing though, Whittingham. And look, man, the commerce of this is interesting because I may sound like hugely overly judgmental when Passan is here and I'm talking about Schefter and Woj or journalism or whatever the principles are supposed to be. He told you flatly, and I can't reject it. Got to feed my family. Schefter, in the information business, you got to feed your family. Who cares about your journalism principles, Lebatard? I got to feed my family. The game of winning at money... Jordan, Republicans buy shoes too, has played that one perfectly. Like, got all the sneaker money and now cashes out high. Like, if that's the game. But holy shit, the losing won't stain him at the end. Like, it's not just losing. It's management incompetence that cost him his friendship with Barkley because Barkley dared to say, hey, you kind of are shitty at some of the personnel stuff. You surrounded yourself with yes men. Cost him the friendship because Jordan didn't want somebody who wasn't a yes man. Didn't want, and never, still hasn't forgiven it because Jordan gets to be mythological Jordan and it doesn't stick to him. That team has been shitty for the entire time that he's owned it.
Right. It's somewhere in his obituary, though, right? I mean, it's somewhere.
No,
just own the team and
he owned the team
and won at the end.
He made three playoffs and never got out of the first round.
No, did he? Is that right?
Yes.
They didn't win a playoff series the entire time? I thought, Jamal Mashburn was before that.
It won't say Gerald Wallace was one of his best players.
Oh, no.
It's got to be somewhere, right?
He could sky.
He was good. Yeah.
Corner threes.
Yeah.
Howdy, folks. It's Mike Ryan. I'm living the gimmick right now. The playoffs have already gotten me, and we're a couple of days into it. It's like a playoff equinox that's going on right now. It's ridiculous. And if you're like me, you like rooting on your team. Trust me. I just bought three for my wife, daughter, and myself for game one. I live it. Because I've been out there. I've been out in those streets. I've been panicking last second trying to find deals. And then when I eventually settle on something, I'm not sure if it's the lowest price out there, and I'm getting just totally blitzed with surprise fees. Well, thankfully, Game Time takes it out of the equation. All the fees are up front. There's no surprises. You get to see what your seat looks like. It's amazing, the technology we have these days. But Game Time has your back always. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app right now, create an account, and use code DAN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code DAN for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute deals, lowest price, guaranteed.
Don Lebatard.
Enough with the DJ Khaled collaborations with people that are hot right now. Yeah. We want to see DJ Khaled work with some of the great singers of yesteryear. Can you imagine how great it would be if DJ Khaled started bringing out special guests onto the stage, and one of them was Bryan Adams? Yeah. Hey everyone, it's
It's Liza Minnelli.
Stugatz.
Barbara Streisand. Yeah. Elton John. It's your song. Andrea Bocelli. Another one. Tony Bennett. Frankie Avalon. Thomas Dolby is blinding you with science.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz.
Is your bracket busted? Then State Farm's here to help with their second chance bracket. Play free during round of 16 for a second chance at a share of the cash. Check it out today at DraftKings.com/State Farm.
I don't even know, Stugatz, honestly. I don't even know if you can call Michael Jordan a shitty owner if the only part of the transaction that matters is, did you make money owning the franchise?
It's hard to say that he, in that regard, it's hard to say that he was a shitty owner. But I think Michael Jordan would tell you, like, hey, I thought I'd do better than what I've done.
They won three playoff games. Three. That Whittingham was just telling me. It was swept, 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 and they won, like, one game in three different series. Or they won. The best they did was win two games in a series against the Heat.
I mean, he's such a competitor, and winning means so much to him. Do you think when Michael evaluates his own job as owner, that he thinks he did a good job? Yes, financially, he thinks he did a good job. But as an owner, do you think Michael thinks he did a good job?
Let me ask you what the... I'm serious about this, okay? What is the measurement? Because I can't sit here and argue. You've heard me over many years argue about Roger Goodell doing shitty things. But I can't say that he's been anything other than good at his job if the math is make football owners a lot more money, get them a lot more power, take all the hits, and then make $500 million in your career because you're more than any player... risking his body because you've helped or you've been at the helm as the, and he's got all sorts of incentives as the business has blown up into the largest thing that we've ever seen. As football keeps growing and somehow they navigated the concussions and the bad press and the...
Dan, a player almost died on the field this past year.
But no matter what, Stugatz, even if he had died, the commerce of the sport is such that this man wins because the sport keeps being giant. And the game is make as much money as possible. This is what... That's the game that Jordan's playing in a room he's usually not let in. Unless you own a team.
Right.
He is giving up a powerful, powerful platform of power that he is selling, and he's selling high because that franchise isn't going to be worth more. It's a loser. It's a loser. But it's in a good market, and those franchises are worth a lot now because they're about to sign a new TV deal, and he can now retire. Michael Jordan, I don't know what the hell else he's going to do with his life after...
I mean, he could have retired a while ago, but to your point, he doesn't have to worry about it anymore.
He can retire from being a loser, like going to those games and even having to live in Charlotte. Michael Jordan's lived a rich, full life. He wants to be on a boat somewhere, resting, not losing, sitting courtside with those losers.
but he picked...
They're his losers.
Yes. Right, exactly. He picked every single one of them. And like that, to me, it's sort of another example in the long line of legendary players that... don't kind of seem to be able to recognize what separates their ability from the ability of normal people or normal NBA athletes. Like Michael Jordan clearly doesn't know how to do player evaluation or management evaluation or draft evaluation. Like he did not put any of those bits of success into the team despite his overwhelming knowledge of basketball. In theory, Michael Jordan should be able to better than any other NBA owner know what it takes to win. And yet, you can apply that to oneself, but you can't apply that to a collective organization.
No, but the way to win is be Michael Jordan. That's a good way to win.
Mm-hmm.
Also attract free agents, and that's the part, like, it didn't seem people were real excited to go play for Jordan.
I think that's where Michael probably is a bit disappointed in himself. Like, I thought me just being here would attract enough free agents for us to be really good.
Yeah, he also didn't hire very good people. I think if you're Michael Jordan, here's how you measure an owner. How do the fans feel? What do they think about Michael Jordan as an owner? Were they real happy the last 10 years? No. They don't care. They don't care what the bottom line is and how much profit he made.
Stugatz, I'm not joking when I tell you whatever number of years that he owned this basketball team, the only thing that I remember about all of those games played is that all of his players said he was good in one-on-one and argued about whether or not they could beat him as he approached 60. Like, it's all... It's,
maybe he selected players he knew he could beat one-on-one.
That's a problem.
But Dan, any, I think it's pretty clear now. I mean, we were joking back here. By that definition, Jeffrey Loria was a good owner of the Florida Marlins and the Miami Marlins. If the job is to increase the value of the team, there probably hasn't been a sports owner in 25 years where the owner of the value of the team has decreased. Right. Every single one of them increases. Like, it's impossible not to. The model is such that every single team
even
increases in value.
Right. The success, right. The success is when you talk to Hornets fans or Bobcats fans, whatever the hell they are now.
Hornets.
You say, Hornets. How'd this go? And if they're like, not well, he wasn't good, then it wasn't good. Like that, I don't care how much money he gets for the team. Like, was this successful? Did I feel good about my team while you were here? And I think the answer is no.
Yeah, but they could always say, but at least Michael Jordan owns the team. Now it's Plotkin.
To that point, you don't see a lot of articles, at least I don't, of fire him or sell the team. There doesn't seem to be a lot of people in Charlotte like, oh, get rid of the team. They seem to still.
Apathy.
It's Charlotte.
They seem to still like, hey, we got Jordan. Hey, he's our owner. He's Jordan.
They're so inconspicuous in the grand scheme of the NBA. It's like, who cares? It's Charlotte. Who's going to sell? Like, why would he sell the team? For what reason?
Just money.
Just money.
And he doesn't have enough of that.
No, nearly enough.
But also to get away from those losers. Gets away from the stink with the billion
dollars.
They're his
losers.
I understand that they're his losers.
Like, could he be moving on to another team? Like, oh, I mean, who knows? He's got so much money that it's like...
Why would he move to another team?
He's still going to own a part of this team, I think.
Mike Scher is going to be with us in a moment to do stat of the day. But before we do that, let's update some tournament here. Stugatz, Michigan State has advanced. Tom Izzo has advanced through the wrong bracket that you have put him in. You had him, many people pointed out that you had him in the Cronin bracket.
Yeah, I do that occasionally just to make sure you're on your toes, you're paying attention, you guys are listening, no one corrected me. I mean, shame on you guys.
Yeah, that's probably fair, to keep us on our toes. Michigan State has advanced. Thank you for the hard work you do, brother.
Kansas sucks.
Brother Teresa, you were a real hero. Always there for us to make sure, testing us, challenging us, making sure that we're on our game. Number 7, Michigan State is still in the tournament. That means this advances.
Brooks Koepka look like the extent of his Spanish is me gusta chicas.
This means that number 2, Marquette, is out.
Jeff Passan looks like he wears a promise ring.
Number 10, USC, is out.
Blake Griffin looked like the assistant manager who no one thinks is ready for this much responsibility.
And I was crushed when Vermont left the tournament.
James Franklin looks like the car salesman who, upon waking up each morning, brushes his goatee, polishes his head, and calmly whispers to himself, showtime, before heading to the dealership.
Mike Scher is with us now. Before we update some more tournament, we were talking about Michael Jordan before you got here. What are we to do with his legacy in Charlotte here before we get to the stat of the day?
Oh, I thought you were talking about who was better, him or LeBron. I was ready to jump in.
It's Michael.
That's also another reason he's been a great owner for the last 12 years. We're still talking about that. Mm-hmm. ESPN, we've turned that into the content monster. God almighty. He wins at the end, does he not, Mike, even though his team stunk?
Well, I mean, he wins at the end because he's going to make $1 billion, but I think he damaged his legacy, if you want to get into the legacy game. Like, he's been a terrible owner. The team's been terrible. In fact, one of the 3 potential stats of the day I have today is about the Charlotte Hornets. I don't know. I have 3 stats. I don't know if you want to choose. You want to spin the wheel. What do you want to do?
But bonus I have 3 stats? Why do you stats have bonus you stats?
I also have something for Mike, by the way, at the end. I have 5 San Diego State baseball players in honor of your stat of the day yesterday about Tony Gwynn being the all-time assist leader at San Diego State.
In basketball.
I have the top 5 San Diego State baseball players that'll put a smile on your face. How about that?
That's exciting.
Fantastic. That sounds excellent. Can't wait.
What a day.
Start of the day. It is the start of the day. Start of the day. It is the start of the day. Start of the day. It is the start of the day. Start of the day. It is the start of the day.
It is brought to you by Venmo. It's your money, your move.
All right, what do you want? You want a stat related to the Charlotte Hornets? Do you want a stat related to Destiny Harden and the University of Miami? Or do you want a stat related to Steph Curry?
What is your
Tell
best
us, stat boy.
What is your best stat intern? I'm glad that you have a bonus today, but what do you feel like is the finest and the most impressive of the stats?
They're all good, Dan. They're all gold. I would say the funniest is Steph Curry. The most relevant to what you're talking about is Michael Jordan, and the one that will get you the angriest is about the University of Miami.
Well, I want that one.
That was weird how he talked slow at the beginning of that sentence and then fast at the
end. That's the one you want. Okay, let's go ahead. You want the one that'll make us angry, the one that's least interesting to the audience.
You angry.
Yes. It's your choice. I'm leaving it up to you.
I want funniest, but Cody hasn't said anything in a while, so I'll let him pick.
I want the angry one.
He picked.
Poor choice.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. We'll see.
Congratulations to Destiny Harden in the University of Miami. He knocked off the number one seed, Indiana. They scored 29 points in the second half to come away with the win. Speaking of 29, the UConn women have been to 29 consecutive Sweet 16s.
Cool. Awesome.
That is impressive.
It's very impressive. But, I mean, it's why the University of Miami making their first one in 31 years is, pretty great.
Wow.
What are you doing?
Woody's getting defensive here.
I mean, I'm defending my own mater.
No, he's right.
He's
right. This is not a Hurricane stat. This is a UConn stat.
Greg Cody.
Making me angry. Yeah.
Penalty box.
What? It wasn't my stat.
2 minutes for selecting the wrong stat.
It wasn't my stat.
You're bad at this. Get out of here.
Put Mike Schur in the penalty box.
I will not put Mike Schur in the penalty box. He gave you the choice. I gave you the choice. You haven't said anything in a while, and then you make a terrible choice.
I expected a Destiny Harden fact, not a UConn fact.
Jack?
Yeah. How about that?
Get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Do you want the Steph Curry one?
No, I don't want anything more from you.
Really?
And even top five San Diego State baseball players, his name make you smile?
Aztecs.
That is fine. I don't think you should be rewarded with this little bonus, like giving him a treat for shitty
work.
Well,
I want it. I want Stugatz's list.
Go ahead. Yeah. Number five.
Bobby Meacham.
I don't even remember Meacham.
He's cracking up.
I don't remember. I know he was with the Yankees. I don't remember where he went to college. Number four.
Aaron Harang.
A good name.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Number four.
He was a good pitcher for the Reds.
Number three.
Butt Black.
Number two.
Al Newman. A twin.
Number one.
Craig Nettles. That won't make much smile. I forgot. Yes.
Nettles. Yeah.
You can check out the podcast with Mike Schur and Joe Podnansky where they open baseball cards. Thank you, Mike, for being on with us.
Anytime.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Levitard.
Who is the comedian? Is it James Mulvaney? How do you pronounce his...
John Mulaney?
There you go. Thank you. John Mulaney.
$2, yeah.
Yeah, that's a bad fine. Wow. Everybody started shaking their head.
I mean, he's arguably the most popular comedian right now. James Mulvaney.
Stugatz.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Is it John Mulvaney the most popular columnist at Levitard?
Oh, my God. Comedian. comedian, Dan. Jesus, get it together.
Excuse me, comedian, my bad.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugats.
Greg Cody.
What was that noise?
And Stugats. You should have seen the two of them. I mean, Whittingham is trying to get us started. We're coming back on live television, and Greg Cody has no idea where he is. And at this point in the show, we
literally looked like he woke him from a nap.
No, but that's what happened. No, what happened is he was deep in his computer. He hit his thermos. And he was talking. No, it's worse than me, because that's usually what it is. Let's talk about me. I love talking about me. That's
Someone
not
tweeted
what happened.
At me.
No. Stugats lured him into his old man net talking about Al Newman having one career homer. The longing for the day of when a guy could have 500 at-bats and play in the major leagues with one homer. And then Greg Cody went on. I don't know where he went, but he was just lost in a childhood delight of looking up old players on the internet.
Al Newman had a season where he had 520 at-bats and no homers. And Greg and I were just talking about how much the game has changed. And I said, Greg, that was normal back then. Like a guy, they had traditional leadoff hitters back then. And I told him to look up Vince Coleman. What'd you find?
I wouldn't have believed it. Vince Coleman in 1986 had 600 at-bats, even. Zero home runs. Never would have believed it.
Crazy.
107 stolen bases that year.
And so it was so exciting that he knocked over his thermos, forgot that we were doing something live.
Oh, that's what we heard at the beginning.
That was the rattle. But he was just lost in a childhood delight of looking at baseball cards. Hypnotized by an old-timey leadoff man.
That's right. I was.
From a bygone age.
Coleman was a great player.
You would have thought he would have stumbled into one home run, though. 600 at bats.
That's what I was thinking. Because other years he had one, two, but zero.
Now you're hooked. Huh?
I will tell you that
Ozzie Smith stumbled into a home run.
Yeah, he did.
Vince Coleman, Stugats, it's one of the great bits of journalism I've ever seen done in my life. Vince Coleman, for the Mets, lost a fly ball in the sun. And his sunglasses were on the cap. He wasn't to lose a game. And they had a picture of that. And then later that night, Vince Coleman in the club wearing sunglasses. It's just the New York Post.
That's why they get out of bed in the morning, the New York Post. I mean, that is flawless.
You can't do better than that. I wanted to ask the group something here, because, Stugats, I legitimately... think the stuff in sports media is interesting. No one finds journalists more interesting than journalists. And so when things are happening at ESPN, I'm just interested. They are the thing in sports that does best what we do. It's the household name, unlike almost any other. And so when I read, ESPN is such a money monster that Disney now is laying off people, and there are no sacred cows. Anybody can get laid off. I'm interested in that, but I really genuinely don't, when talking about ESPN, want to sound bitter, because I'm so grateful for what ESPN did for us. Mm-hmm. But everyone saw how we got like sort of belched out the side door because they weren't supporting the thing that Jeff Passan wants to come and be around, because it's goofy and fun and you don't have to stand on a mark and people are allowed to have fun around sports. But I don't know how to talk about it. I think it's interesting every time. Like, oh, wow, they're really going to layoffs here. And no sacred cows. I don't believe that. They've decided.
There's no way.
There's got to be a couple cows that are sacred.
Well, Stephen A. Smith and the high salary guys, all the Joe Bucks. But when Chris Fowler looks at what Joe Buck is making and says, well, wait a minute. I've been here since Scholastic Sports America. I did a high school show for you guys, and I'm making $3 million a year. Why does Joe Buck get that much? And now they're being talked about it. Like, he does Wimbledon. That's a hard one to do. And good God, is he prepared. Like, Chris Fowler.
He's great.
He loves it.
Yes. He is so good at that job. But if I'm at ESPN and I'm Chris Fowler and I'm making $3 million a year, and they're paying everyone else $17 million, the New York Post is reporting, they're offering him a small raise. I'm Chris Fowler. I'm looking around and saying, well, wait a minute. Why am I not one of your signature voices? I do all of your big things.
I could be your cow.
Van Pelt is a sacred cow. All the information guys are sacred cows, correct?
I would say all the information guys, Schefter, Woj, passing for sure. Kirchin is a sacred cow.
Greeny seems like a cow.
Greeny. They have like four or five. That's the model. It's play-by-play, information, and three to five hosts who are going to host everything.
Herb Street.
Yep. I mean, he's an analyst, but he's safe.
But I'm just saying, I told you a while ago that my agent told me, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, what they're going to do is get rid of the middle class. They're going to get rid. They're going to have like 10, 6 high-priced stars,
mm-hmm.
and then everyone else is going to be disposable, and they're going to get rid of everybody who's in the middle there. And it's exactly what's happened.
It's where they're at, yes. I would imagine Reese Davis is one of those sacred cows, just guys who could host multiple events. So
if Chris Fowler is in a sacred cow, like just for longevity expertise, it would be really wrong if he left there. Like
I think he is one of those guys. I do. Well,
but the New York Post is reporting, like, they're putting him as the centerpiece of this is where the conflict resides. A guy making $3 million a year who's looking at newcomers who are being paid $17 million a year to do less of a job, a more important job. But Joe Buck isn't being asked to do Wimbledon on the side. He's not being asked to fly to college football games throughout Saturdays and, like, work through the old ESPN ethos way of I will work my way up from high school sports America
right
to the top job I can have at the company when I've been here all my life.
Is Joe Buck just doing Monday Night Football? Do we know if he's doing golf? Do we know if he's doing Major League Baseball? Do we know if he's doing any of that stuff? I don't know the answer.
I think he's got a production deal, and I think he did some side casts for the Masters and the PGA Championship, but his job, as far as I can tell, is to do Monday Night Football.
Right.
And the reason why it was so valuable is because of the race to not only for ESPN Disney to get a Super Bowl, which they needed to have a top level team in order to convince the NFL that they'd merited a Super Bowl, but also because ESPN has tried any number of Monday Night Football variations that in the eyes of these sports press didn't work. And
also,
they just bought a booth that they know worked, and that was the price for it. And everyone went nuts. But the NFL announcers profited more than anyone, and I'm not certain that those two markets are comparable.
I think they're just hoping, ESPN's hoping that Fowler realizes, okay, I get paid a lot to do this, and I want this job. So it's right. aspect of it of like, if you get too hand, like I know that it's bad business to be like, oh, I'm just going to be too scared to ask for more money, but he gets paid a lot of money to do a job that he seems like he loves a lot. So it's like, if I start going in there, all of a sudden I'm gone from that job if I start demanding more money.
Well, you're gone without having had that job.
That's right.
You were the first round of these cuts.
That's right.
That's debatable.
Is it? You were the first round of people being fired.
It was a round before
while
you.
We were at ESPN. There's been a lot of rounds of layoffs at ESPN.
Christopher started the trend.
Yeah, I think Chris was like a fifth round cut, you know? Yeah.
I'm asking the audience.
Almost made it.
And I'm asking the rest of you, is this stuff interesting to others? Because it is interesting to me, the going to on, the media jobs, media movements. There's a whole cottage industry of media reporters who get traffic because they report on these things. I don't know, though, as we sit here talking, do the people listening to this care that Disney and ESPN, monster moneymakers, would possibly get rid of Chris Fowler, who should be grateful that you're saying that he has a job that pays a lot of money, when Chris Fowler just saw somebody come into his company and get 14 more million a year who's never worked there? 14 more million a year. Why do you think they would be immune to the same things that athletes notice in locker rooms about this stuff? That Joe, for a job that requires less and has given less to the company.
I'm certain Fowler notices it. I'm certain Fowler is not happy about it. But to Chris's point, there's a line a mile long of people waiting to replace Chris Fowler at ESPN, and save for Joe Buck, and would probably do it for less. And so I'm certain Fowler's upset about it, but you want to lose that platform? You want to lose that relevancy? Because you being the voice and the face and everything of college football for ESPN has to have some value to you.
It's kind of like here, too. I mean, we just signed Pablo Torre. I'm not going now, oh, Pablo just signed. I need more. Like, I'm happy to have this job. I get paid well. Like, you know what I mean? I feel like it's kind of similar to that. It's like, yeah, everyone wants more money, but Is it practical? Is it, or is it deserved?
Oh, I just think the ego of the vanity business and television makes this inescapable. Like, there are two, you don't get into television because you don't want to be seen. You don't want to be famous. You don't want to be respected. You don't want to be paid. You don't want to cover whatever your insecurities are by being an important person on television.
But do you think if Chris Fowler left ESPN and went to, let's say, Fox and became their voice of college football, would he get something close to $17 million?
I'm just talking about the humanity of, you're a lifetime employee. You came up, like, he is one of the great success stories in the history of that company. He's been on television for them since he was almost a boy. He was like 19 years old or something.
Yep.
His whole career has been at that place. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether that place should value him monetarily in a way that gives him $17 million, but I'd guess that he thinks his employer cares about him.
I don't think big business cares. And I'm not sure America cares about whether Chris Fowler's being mistreated. Now, I think if
it's not mistreatment. I won't say mistreated.
Well, underpaid, whatever you want to say.
I'm just asking, what are you allowed to expect from your employer when a whole bunch of people are walking through the door? And now I'm talking about the business is cutting people. They are going, I don't know what that means. Do you guys know what it means? Is anyone that's going to be fired in the next couple of days going to be somebody that people listening to this care about?
I think if it's Stephen A. Smith, America goes,
whoa. It's not going to be Stephen A. Smith.
Well, no, but
it's not going to be. Obviously, but I'm using
that as an example. If it's much below the Stephen A. Smith level,
but that's the top level.
There's Fowler. No, will people care about Fowler?
You're saying they're NFL running backs. Everyone else is disposable, is what you're saying. It's Van Pelt. It's Stephen A. Smith, and it's the broadcasters, and everyone else is disposable.
I'm saying if it's much below Stephen A. Smith, I don't think people pay attention.
Mina Kimes.
I would pay attention to that. I would think it would be terrible.
Well, that's below Stephen A. Smith.
Well, but in NFL circles, I think she's about as good as it gets.
I like this game, though. Let's keep playing. Jason Fitz.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm just playing. I'm not saying. I love Jason Fitz. I'm just saying.
What are you doing to Fitzy, man?
We're playing the game. Would you react? I'm just asking Greg.
I just did.
No, you knew the answer.
I love Jason Fitz.
I'm sure you do.
Good save.
Love that band he was in.
He just asked, what band was he in?
I love Jason Fitz.
He had to save it. Yeah.
When we went up to Bristol, he's a really nice guy, Jason Fitz.
I would put him in my top five nicest people at ESPN. Seriously.
Genuinely excited to meet us. We were like,
go ahead
good
and
energy.
Put that list together. Let me see what you got.
Christine Lisi is up there. Mm-hmm.
The guy that was just here.
Jeff Passan is up there. Tim Kirchen is up there.
Oh, yeah. Kirchen.
That's four.
Reese Davis.
Reese. Fantastic. And Linda Cohn. I mean, there it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Linda Cohn, yeah.
What's your list?
Your fingers are yellow.
So is Clooney's.
So are Clooney's.
Why? How many cigarettes are you smoking?
It's this yellow pad, this sticky pad.
Oh,
the yellow sticks to your face.
Right about that. Excuses. Yeah.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.